Shavua Tov and Chodesh Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chumin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Daf Tetz Zayin. So the last thing that we learned is the din. We're still really in the middle of the circuit. We're going to get back to it. Is the din of utilizing something that is connected to the ground in order to shecht. And the last thing we learned was the distinction between something that is currently attached to the ground, but was not initially attached to the ground, or something that is attached to the ground from the beginning, and this is the way it was, and is therefore defined by it. And we saw, oh boy, I'm telling you, and we saw that there is, in fact, a machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Chiya about these things, about whether they are kosher b'di'avad. According to Rebbe Chiya, it's kosher l'chatchila in any situation. And according to Rebbe, if it was mechubar from the beginning, it's possible even b'di'avad. If it was a b'lechatchila, it was separated, and then it's mechubar, so it's called tolush or b'sof chibro, then it would be kosher b'di'avad. So this was the way that we had last learned, which brings us to another issue that we haven't discussed, and that is the idea of koach adam. Now, it says in the pasuk, dafka, the word v'zavachta, that you should be zaveach v'achalta, which is mashma that we need to have a human force that is doing the shechita, rather than a shechita that is achieved through some other force. Now, this is something, of course, that we find in many inyanim, even in something as common as netilas yadayim. There's an inyan that it has to be poured out from an adam, and not that it's passive and that the adam sticks his hands into the passive water flow. The same thing is true about shechita, which leads us to the question of utilizing a machine to do shechita. Is it considered to be the work of an adam? So, Marmar, hashochet b'muchani, so if you shecht with a machine, then shechitato kishira. Now, the problem is that there's another braita that says shechitato pisula. So how do we explain that? And obviously, the question is, what powers the machine? So if the machine is powered by a human being, and he's cycling on it, or he's turning it with his hand, so then the shechita would be kosher, because it doesn't have to be that the koach ha'adam is directly moving the knife with his hands directly against the neck. It's just that ultimately it has to be coming from energy that is being provided by an adam. And it doesn't matter how far away this energy is, unless it's indirect. So then it becomes a groma biyama, as we'll see. So lokasha, it doesn't really present any problem, because habasarna de pachra, if you're talking about a machine that is being run like a potter's wheel, right? So a potter's wheel, what he does is he moves his feet up and down in order to get it to turn while he's moving the pottery against it. So that is a human being. But the other brisa that says that it's Poso, that's talking about where it's a water-operated machine, so it's therefore hydraulic, and it's not human. And because of that, you cannot use the other source of energy to drive the shechita. That's one answer, or actually we could say, I mean, it boils down to the same answer, but just that it shouldn't be a misleading that there's a fundamental difference between a pachra machine and a maya machine, is actually, you could say that both of them are even talking about a sarna de maya. Both of them are talking about a water-run machine. But there's still times where that is considered to be koach adam, even though it's a water-run machine. And how is that? Habikoach rishon, the first braita that says that your kosher is talking about where it's the first source of energy, and ha b'koach sheni. Now, it's important for us in order to understand this, that potential energy and the release of potential energy is considered to be a direct energy of the person who releases it, which is why if you fire an arrow at somebody, you are chayav for killing him. because the force in the arrow, despite the fact that the force might have been imparted to the arrow by someone else, and he hands you an arrow that's pulled all the way back, and all you do is release the arrow. That doesn't matter. You are the one who's considered to have shot the arrow. So the release of potential energy is exactly the same as directly imparting that energy for the very, you know, that's obviously part of the way that energy works. So let's say you've got a lot of water piled up against a dam or a board that's holding back the water. You remove the board or you make a hole in the board. The water that pours out of that first hole doesn't run down a stream. It hits the wheel directly. That is your energy, exactly the same way that shooting the arrow is your energy. But water that's coming afterwards and that's running down the stream and turning the wheel, that is not considered to be your energy. That's just considered to be a grumma where you allowed that water out to run the wheel. So there are water wheels that are essentially human-powered water wheels, and that would be kosher. And there are water wheels that are only human grumma water wheels, and that is not kosher. So we don't have to make the difference as acute as the difference between a human-empowered machine or a hydraulic machine. It's not as binary as that. This is like the famous halacha that Rav Papa pointed out. If you've got that, you know, that beautiful Western, that's always the big thing in the Western, right? You tie the girl down to the railroad tracks, and she's screaming, ah, and the hero's on his way, and the train is on its way, and who's going to get there first, train or hero? So now the question is, the guy who tied the girl down to the railroad tracks, is he chayev or not? Now, all the kids in the audience are convinced that the villain is chayev misa, but it's not so.
Snidely Whiplash. Snidely Whiplash is his name.
There's not only one villain.
That's the early scene.
He's the pantomime. Okay. He's the only villain in Barnea's neighborhood.
So this is Rav Papa Shita. Haima de katfei lechavre, v'ashkele lebitke demaya. A guy ties somebody up to the railroad tracks, and then he lets the dam out. So now the water is running down the railroad tracks, right? Similar to our case. So if the water directly hits him when he releases the dam, so then he would be chayev. So if he's ashkel lebit kedamaya v'meit, he's chayev. Why? Because it's like an arrow. That you shoot. What's the difference if you shoot an arrow where the energy for the arrow was held in the string, and nonetheless it's considered to be your energy? So this is the like an arrow. The water is gire didei. It was held back in the string. In this case, the string is a dam, and you were the one who released the dam. It's exactly the same thing. But hani mile b'choach rishon. This is only where it's the direct released energy that kills the guy. So the water lands directly on him when you open it up. But if he's downstream and you release the water, so then at the time that you tied the guy down in the place where the water was going to come, there was no water yet coming. And therefore, tying him down, you weren't high of anything. And when you release the water, at that point, you released the water, but it was not direct. It was only a grumma. And that allowed the water to get there. But allowing water to get there is not considered to be first-degree murder, because it's not coming directly from your koyach. So this is first degree, is koyach rishon, and koyach sheni is second degree, see? So that would basically be the question over here. Was the train on its way when the girl got tied down to the tracks? Now, that's the essential issue. If the train were not on its way, so then when you tied the girl down, you didn't do anything. And then afterwards, even if you were the one who released the train, it would just be a grumma. And that's the issue. And so it's only where something... What is going on here? There you go. Mordechai Schenkler's proves that all those hours of TV were not for nothing. They were all there to understand 10,000 hours of Whiplash, to understand one line in Chulin. That's great. Well, that's how it goes. Okay. Beautiful, beautiful, sophisticated understanding of the nature of energy, no? Yosef Rav, according to Rebbe Chiya, so Rav was sitting in Shir behind Rebbe Chiya, because Rebbe Chiya was a greater chacham than him, and Rebbe was giving the Shir. Rebbe Chiya was directly in front of Rebbe, and Rebbe was saying over the following, Minayin l'shchita shubatolush. So remember, this is Rebbe Shita, that tolush is ma'akev, and if it's not tolush, then the Shechita is possible, unless it was Tolosh, then you just connected it, but that was just the Gezerah. So, minayin l'shechita shu betolush, shenemar, it says by Avram Avinu, vayikach et ha-ma'achelet lishchot et b'no. Why did Avram have to take along a knife? I mean, he could have shechted by wherever he was walking, there were stones. He could have just moved the stone to be the knife. So you see from there that it has to be detached. It's not necessarily so pushing to take a stone out of the ground. And so because of that, he took a stone along. So Rav says to Rebbe Chiya, because Rav didn't understand what was going on, or maybe he didn't hear. We'll see. There's two ways of understanding the Gemara that comes up. So Rav asks Rebbe Chiya, what was he saying? Omar Leis, Rebbe Chiya said, the Pashtus is that Rav was asking, I don't see how is he proving it from there. So Rebbe Chiya said to Rav, well, I'll tell you, what he said is so full of breaks in it that it's like trying to write a vav on an ufta. You know, you're going to take a piece of a tree trunk and you're going to write a vav on it. How clearly is that vav going to be written with all the ins and outs? It's going to be a vav with like 100 different cracks in it going in all different directions. That's about as cracked up as what he said. Forget it. Okay. But the Gemara says, didn't he say a pasuk? I mean, how does Rebbe Chiya just throw out a pasuk? So that's one approach. The other approach is that Rav didn't hear what the pasuk was coming to prove. And so he asked, I only walked in now, I only heard the pasuk. So what was he saying from the pasuk? So according to that, Rav asks the question, didn't Rebbe say a pasuk? The other approach is the Gemara asks the question. How can Rebbe Chiya tell Rav he didn't say anything if he quoted the pasuk? The pasuk doesn't prove that it's essential. The Torah wants to tell us that Avraham Avinu did not take any chances in suffering a delay for the Shechita of Yitzchak. He's going to come there and he's going to have to start looking now for something to do the Shechita with. So because of that, he made sure to take along his knife. All right, so now it turns out that there is a machlokas about, according to Rebbe, we're saying that actually it's only kosher bidi avad. If we said before, this was what we had landed up with before we learned the machine, which is why I reviewed it for you. So we ended up with a machlokas yesterday. And that was that according to Rebbe, it's only mutter bidi avad if you shechted when it was reattached to the ground or now attached to the ground. And according to Rebbe Chiya, it's kosher l'chatchila even if it was always attached to the ground. So Amar Rava, I mean, the reason why we don't make a nafkamina in Rebbe Chiya, as Rashi explains, is that, look, according to Rebbe, it makes sense to say a difference between l'chatchila and b'diavad, because since there's a fundamental problem with something that's b'chubra l'karka, so even though there is no fundamental problem when it's tolosh and following the talisha, it's b'chubra, but it makes sense to make a gezera, because if people are going to be using a tolosh or sof chibro, they may end up using a chibro mi'kor. But according to Rebbe Chiya, there's no fundamental issue. So why should we go around making gezeiras? For what purpose? So Omar Rava, this idea of the difference between things that are mechubar naturally, or they were talush and then you were mechaber them artificially, there are areas where we need to define exactly what that din is. So let me start with the things that are clear. Okay, it's pshitali. It's obvious to me that the din of tolosh olabesov chibro, in terms of avodah zarah, is definitely tolosh. I see that all over the place. That things that are attached to the ground, but they weren't originally attached to the ground. Somebody builds a building, and now he bows down to the building. That is not considered to be avodah zarah because, remember, you cannot worship something which is part of the earth. And we learned that out from the pasuk Eloheihem al heharim, velo heharim Eloheihem. So that means things that are attached cannot be icons and cannot actually become usher. And since it says beferish that the halacha is that hamishtachav el habayit shelo, it's asra. How could you asra your house by bowing down to it? If you're going to tell me that it's considered to be mechubar, even though obviously the house was built and then it's attached to the ground, it didn't grow from the ground. And if you're going to tell me that that would be nonetheless considered to be mechubar, how could you asur your house by bowing down to it? This would be included under the general halacha of Eloheihem al haharim velo haharim Eloheihem. And therefore, since you can asur your house, it's clear that if it wasn't initially connected to the ground, naturally connected to the ground, in terms of the dinim of avodah zarah, it's not considered to be mechubar. Now, what about in terms of hechsher zroyim? So this takes us back to our recent learning of makshirin. And remember that we learned in makshirin, the very important halacha, anything which is tchilato l'ratzon. Makshirin, remember, all starts with the pasuk of ki yitein mayim al zera, and is how it's written, and yet it's pronounced ki yutan mayim al zera. And the vav is very conspicuously missing. So we darshan from that, water that falls, it can even fall without your putting it there. If it's similar to ki yitain, meaning you want it there, then it's considered to be a machshir water. And if subsequently, even not at the time, if subsequently peirot get wetted by this water, it is going to be machshir them lekabel tuma. It doesn't have to be that you want it on the peirot. It only has to be that the initial falling of this water was l'ritzonecha. But it cannot be that you wanted it to fall on something that's mechubar l'karka. It's only going to be machshir if the thing that it's falling on is not considered to be mechubar l'karka. And that we learn from the analyzing the pasuk, sorry, v'chiyutan mayim al zera v'nafal v'nivlatam alav tameyu lachem, it cannot be referring to something that is mechubar. Okay, so if that's the case, I can prove to you that that is a machlokas tanoim, says Rav. So although when it comes to the question of avodah zarah, it's definitely not considered to be the equivalent of mechubar, when it comes to Hechsher Zroyim, it's a machloket if it's considered to be Bechubar. And here is where I see that from the Mishnah we had in Makshirin. HaKofeh Kiara al HaKotel. So somebody takes a plate, he turns it over on top of a wall, and it's raining. And he does that in order to make sure that he rinses off the plate that he put on the wall. B'shvil Shetu Dach. So then, even though it had nothing to do with any kind of payout, that water is considered to be included in the pasuk of Kiyutan Mayim al Zera. And if subsequently anything gets wet from it, any produce gets wet from it, and Zroyim get wet from it, it is going to be Mukshir Lekabel Tuma. And that's because it doesn't require, it only requires Tchilasai L'Ratzen, as we learned in Makshirin. But if you put the plate on the wall to protect the wall, b'shvil shelo yilakeh hakotel, you don't want the wall, maybe you would just put the cement on the wall and you want to make sure it doesn't get wet, so you cover it with this upside down bowl. So then it's not Bechiyutan, because you don't want that water at all. Now, this Mishnah, if you look at it more carefully, is self-contradictory. Why do I say that? Because look, Hagufa Kasha. First you said, if you put the plate down in order that the plate should be washed off, so then it's Bechiyutan, which implies that if you put it there so that the Kotel should be washed off, and not the plate, so let's say the water was falling a little bit to the side, you put the plate there in order that the water should fall over the Kotel and clean off the wall, let's say, right? So then the mashmaut is that it would not be Bechiyutan. It has to be only for the plate. Ha'bishvil shiyudach ha'kotel ein ze Bechiyutan. But then you go right ahead and contradict yourself by saying, but if you put the plate there in order that the wall isn't damaged by the water, then it's not Bechiyutan, which is mashma, that if you put the plate there in order for it to be washed off by the water, bishvil shiyudach ha'kotel, then ha'reza Bechiyutan. So make up your mind. Is it or is it not going to be Bechiyutan if it's coming down for the purpose of the wall? Amar Rabbi Elazar, oh, this is a disaster. No way to understand this Mishnah except to recognize that it's actually presenting the views of two separate Tanoim. And that's called Tavra. Split it into two. Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. Whoever said that first part obviously does not agree with the last part and vice versa. So this is what I mean when I say it's clear to me that it is a machlokas tanoi. Okay, so that was Rav's understanding. Rav Papa says that's not the only way to understand it. You could easily answer that it's all going to according to the same Tana. And the point over here is that for sure it's considered to be a not mechubar. And the difference is, what type of wall are we talking about? Are we talking about the wall of a cave? If it's a wall of a cave, then it's a natural wall. If it's a wall of a building, then it's not a natural wall. And everybody is mode, if it's not a natural wall, then it's definitely considered to be not mechubar. And therefore, nobody argues, the way Rav is claiming, nobody's arguing about whether it was Tolosh or Basof Chibro. If it's Tolosh or Basof Chibro, it's definitely Tolosh. If it's a Kotomara, so then it was Mechubar Meikara. So what it's saying, how do I fit that into the Mishnah? Very simple. I say like this. Sorry, comment. Hakofek Kiara Lakotel, if it's in order for the Kara to be rinsed off, so then Areza Bechiyuta. But that implies that if you wanted the wall to be washed off, it's not Bechiyuta. Now you have to understand. Add in these words, Bamed Varma Murim. This is only true if you're talking about a wall that was a natural wall that was part of a cave. Avo Bekoto Binyan, you built a wall? So then it comes the end of the Mishnah. If it's Bishvil Shelo Yilakeh HaKotel, it's in order to prevent damage to the wall. So then obviously it's not Bechiyutan because you don't want the water. That's what the whole point is. You put it there in order to avoid the water. But if you would put it there in order to direct the water to the wall, Bishvil Shiyudach HaKotel, since this is a Kotel that you built, it would be, in fact, Bechiyutan, because it's not considered to be Mechubar. It's considered to be Talush, and that fits perfectly, and there's no need to create a Machlokas. Anyway, says Rav, okay, so now you understand what I think is clear. Maybe Rav Papa disagrees. Okay, I think it's clear. Now, what I don't think is clear is this. What would be the din about Talush Ula Besof Chibro when it comes to the Inyanim of Shechita? And he obviously was unconvinced with everything that we said before. Rava did not agree with our diyukim, as we're about to go through right now. And so he would like to know, prove to me what the Inyan is in terms of Shechita. Is it considered to be something that is Tolosh, Or is it considered to be something that's mechuber if it was Tolosh and in the end it was Chibro? And obviously this question is only meaningful in terms of Rebbe, because according to Rebbe Chia, it doesn't matter in the least. He doesn't agree that there's something that is wrong fundamentally with a thing that is connected to the ground. It doesn't matter whether even if it was Chibro from the beginning, and he holds it's even Lechatchila. There's no problem whatsoever. So obviously, he's only asking, Rav is only asking, what would Rebbe say about it? Would he say that it's Pasol Afilo B'diavad, or would he view this as a something that is really Tolush, and therefore it would be B'diavad kosher? I understand that he made a gzera. Maybe he'll end up using something that was Mechuper Meikaro, but I want to know what the din would be. So we want to bring a raya from the Brisa that we learned yesterday. So Tashma, Hayatzor Yotze Min HaKotos. You've got this stone sticking out from a wall, or you have a naturally growing reed. So in other words, it's still attached, and you shechted with it, then the shechita is pasul. So it says over here that it's a kotel, and we're talking about it not being kosher. So apparently, if you built a kotel, you built a wall, even though it was originally a human construct, it wasn't that it naturally emerged from the ground, so you can't use it, afilu b'diavad, according to Rebbe. That's what I understand. Says the Gemara, who says? So as we explained before, this could easily be referring to a wall that was entirely natural, and it was a wall inside of a cave. Maybe it had collapsed, but right now what we're using is something that was a natural formation. And look, I mean, you could see that from the context, because what else is included in this? The case of the kana. The kana, the whole point of the kana is that it is growing on its own, right? So why do you put the two together, or a reed? Because that's the point. We're trying to show you the context, namely that we're dealing with something that is completely natural, whether it's the wall or whether it's the reed, and that's the problem. Shmami, no, you're right. It's clear that what we were talking about over here was dafka, was mechubar mi'ikorei, and it's not telling us anything about what the din would be like Rebbe in other circumstances. All right, one second. Remember, we also had, as part of that braita, this is the first part of that braita, by the way, and that was ma'at sakin bakoto v'shachatba. Now look, over here it says beferish. You take a shechita knife, and there's a hole in the wall, you stick this shechita knife into the wall, and then you use it for shechita, shechita to kishera. It says over here that it's kosher. So if we're dealing with this whole issue, it's clearly we're trying to say it's kosher b'diavad alibet Rebbe, right? Because he's the only one that says that it's a problem. According to Rebbe Chia, I mean, what are we discussing? There is no problem of mechuber. So it's see over here that since you started with something that was not attached to the ground, apparently that is considered to be tolush, and it is a kosher shechita. Not necessarily, says the Gemara. Because the din of connecting something artificially to the ground may be a function of whether your intent is to leave it there. But when you put a knife into that situation, why the heck would you take a good shechita knife and leave it permanently attached to the ground so you're not mevatel it? We were not talking about a case like that when we were talking about Tolosh Basof Chibro. We were talking about you built on a wall, whatever, you know, over there you intend for that wall to remain standing as long as it possibly can. Over here, Shine Sakin Galoma Vatale. He certainly is not intending to leave it there, and therefore it's not a problem to bring a right. It doesn't prove anything. What about if it would be something like a stone? And I would want to leave it there. Maybe then it would be kosher. Maybe then, in fact, it would not be kosher because it would be considered to be the equivalent of mechuber. So that sounded good, right? Okay. But the same braita says, "B'mechuber lekarka shechita tokshira." It says beferish that if you use something that was mechubar lekarka, then it is kosher. So we're referring over here, since we talked about three things, right? All of these things are in the Braita. We talked about a reed that was in its natural growing, and we said that's not kosher. That's what we said before, that it was going like Rebbe, and that reed was put in there in order for us to understand that the kotel was a natural kotel, was referring to the wall of a cave, right? And then we have the din of the knife, okay? And you said, okay, the knife is because the knife is not batel. Ah, precisely. So now, when it says this third category, that if it was mechurba lekarka, now it's obviously not it's not repeating the first thing. It's the opposite of the first thing. When it was mechurba lekarka, and it's a shchitas akshira, and that means besides the knife. So it's clearly saying if it was a natural wall, it's possible a libra rebbe, and if it's currently mechurba lekarka b'diavad, shchitas akshira. Okay, so you see that in fact talush ulabesov chibro is considered to be kosher. It's not considered to be the equivalent of permanent detachment. Well, no, not necessarily, because the Braita may be developing its thesis over here. In other words, it started off by saying, if you have something which is a natural formation, like a kotel of a mara or a kona that is growing, so then it would be certainly possible, according to Rabbi. And then, if, however, it was mechubar lekarka, it was kosher. And what do I mean? Not that it's a separate case from the knife. It is the case of the knife. What do I mean when I say if you connected it to the ground, it's kosher? I mean only the case of a sakin. My mechubar lekarka, I mean the sakin, that's kosher because I have no intention of leaving it there, and therefore lo mevatale. But enochinami, if it was something just stam a rock, maybe it would be considered to be the equivalent of a mechubar meikorin would be possible. So we don't necessarily have three different statements in this braita. Okay, so we end up that we basically don't know. We don't know what the din would be, aliba derebi. Omar, getting back to this braita. Now remember, before, we took for granted that we don't have a problem if you hold that the shechita is kosher, whatever the case would be, whether it was l'chatchila, libra rabbi chia, and it was a natural formation, or it was b'diavad, and it was an unnatural formation, according to Rebbe, whatever the case is. We took for granted yesterday that it doesn't matter if the head of the animal is being brought up against the knife, which is facing down, or if the head of the animal, because, I mean, the knife can't move, it's permanently implanted. It's the head of the animal that's going to move in the hands of the shechet. And it certainly sounded like, as we were medayik yesterday, it doesn't matter. If you move the head of an animal back and forth on top of a knife that is sticking out with its edge facing upwards, we don't have to worry that the weight of the animal nor a movement of the animal would have caused there to be a drisa by pressing down. That's what we were medayik. Now, surprisingly, turns out that we were oversimplistic. Omar mar, na'at sakin bakoto v'shachata shchitato k'sheira. And what we didn't know is that Rav Anan quoted Shmuel as saying, this is only true if the knife was above the neck of the animal facing down, and the shechet was holding the neck of the animal against the knife coming from beneath it. So, l'shon v'l'shakin l'mala v'tzavara b'ema l'mata. But if the sakin was below facing up, and the tzavara b'ema, which is moving, is what's on top of it, there, we're worried about it, and we passel it. Why? Because chashina shema yidros. There may be a movement downwards because of the weight of the animal's neck and its movements. Instead of cutting, you might be pressing and pressuring it, which is called drisa.
What?
Just yesterday we learned that wasn't true. We read in the Braita, Ben Shasakin Lamata Vitzavar Beima Lamala, Ben Shasakin Lamala Vitzavar Beima Lamata. Now, what? How in the world can you tell us, Shmuel's telling us against the Braita Beferish? Omer of Zvid, you misunderstood that Braita. That Braita was talking about two cases. Remember? It said, first of all, you can use anything, whether it is Mechubar LaKarka or whether it's not Mechubar LaKarka, right? And then it said, Ben Shasin Lamata Vitzava. Yeah, but you thought that that was referring to both possibilities. And if the knife is immovable, you said it's referring back to that too. It's referring to whether or not the knife was moving or the knife was solid implanted in the wall. But that was a mistake. Let's study Katani. The Braita was talking about two unrelated dinim, okay? It's true. You can shecht with the knife in the wall, and you can shecht with the knife in your hand. But the last part, where we're talking about the sakin underneath, and the tzavar behema lemala, which is true if it wasn't attached to the wall. The sakin lemala, the tzavar behema lemata, that part was talking about where it is attached to the wall. That's the only option that you have. When it's attached to the wall, the only option that you have is to have the knife above and the neck below so that we don't have to be chayish for drisa. And although you're right, it's a little clumsy, but it's not impossible that we read the Braita like that, you know? Rav Papa says, that is very clumsy. And maybe that's because the neck of an animal is clumsy, but the neck of a bird is not. So maybe you're right the way you read it the first time, but it's not referring to an actual mammalian neck, which is actually much heavier, and there we'd have to be chayish for drisa. This is referring to a chicken. You're shechting a chicken. It doesn't matter whether you hold the neck of the chicken from the bottom against the knife that's sticking out, and that would be true, and therefore we don't have to say it was litzdani. Now, speaking about using a reed, is that so pashut? Because Omer of Chista, Omer Rebbe Yitzchak, or substance actually a braita that says there's five things that you cannot use a reed with. And this is because they have a tendency to actually break off little pieces and cause damage. So there's five things you got to worry about. Chamisha dvarim nemru bekrumish shalkana. Do not do shechita with it, because if a piece breaks off and punctures one of the simonim, so now you're not going to have a kosher shechita. And ein malinba, that for sure, you certainly don't want to cause any problems with a mila. Shechita you can always throw out, but milas are difficult to throw out. And therefore, for sure, you don't want to use a kana that can break off pieces. Ein mechatchim babasa, you can't even cut meat with it, because somebody may choke on an embedded piece that he doesn't see. Can't use it as a toothpick for the same reason. It can puncture your gums. Ein mechatzin bashinayim. Sorry, excuse me one moment. The ein mechanchin ba. Now, we assume that ein mechanchin ba means after using the bathroom. You can't use it, which, of course, could cause some very unpleasant damage. That's what we think it means. So, let's go over them. How could you say, Ein shochatim ba? We learned in the Braita beferish. Bako shochatim, bein bitzur, bein bischuchit, bein bekrumit shokan. Over here it says, beferish, you can use a reed. So what are you telling me against the beferish of Braita? That you can't use a reed? Answers the Gemara, Omer of Papa, it depends what kind of reed you're talking about. The Braita is referring to a simuna the agma, the type of reed that grows in a swamp, in a marsh. So those are very strong, and when they're dried, they make perfectly good, sharp cutters, and therefore it's not a problem. The type of reed that is a problem is the kind of reed that grows out of the ground on the side of a road and so on. Of course, as we all know, that has a tendency to break off pieces. Then it says, "In mechatrim ba'basar," Rav Papa didn't mind cutting kirve dogim, the zige. He said, "I don't mind cutting fish, the insides of fish with it, because it's so transparent that you'd be able to clearly see if there was a piece of the reed in it, and you wouldn't choke on it." And Rabba Bar Avuna would cut even chicken with it, or any fowl meat, because it's soft, and therefore it's not going to break off a splinter into that. And then it says, "Ein mekan chimba." Now, assuming that that refers to the bathroom, then it has nothing to do with reeds, because there's a general halacha that you cannot use anything that's flammable. So much for all the crazies that use this bathroom tissues and toilet paper and go crazy every time there's a war, to go running to the first thing they do is buy 5,000 rolls of toilet paper, where toilet paper is usher to use. Because I'm a kaneach b'davar sha'ur sholetet bo, besides the fact that it doesn't do very much, but if you use something that's flammable, then shinav no sharot. This is like a kind of segula kind of thing. But you can actually cause your teeth to fall out, which obviously doesn't mean your teeth. It's referring to the teeth of the tissues that maintain the shape of the rectum. And if you use something that urshaletet bo, you can actually injure yourself, is what it means. But then it has nothing to do with its being a reed. It only has to do with its actually being something that's flammable. So why would you include it in the dinim of a reed? Omer of Papa, we're not talking about using it for wiping yourself. We're using it for kinuach pimaka. We're using it to talk about taking off the top of an open wound where you want to clear off tissue that is not going to heal. And so the doctor will always cut off any parts that need to be taken off. Don't use a reed, because if a piece breaks off, then it can make splinter and leave splinters inside of the very wound that you're trying to actually clear. And that is only a din in a reed, and it has nothing to do with its being flammable. Okay, so now we have finished our discussion of reeds. Now, let's talk about the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Hakol shochatim." Man, that sure sounds familiar to me. I thought that's how the Masechet began. Why are we repeating this? "Ula olam shochatim." So, can you tell me what this means? Oh, of course I'll tell you. This is a totally different issue. This is not talking about who does the shechita. This is talking about what is included in shechita. So akol shochatim means all things are included in the dinim of shechita, which tells me that even birds need to be shechted. Because since the Torah doesn't mention shechita in terms of birds, it only mentions shechita in terms of the animals that you were using in the parsha that you're talking about. And the Zvicha was talking about the Tzon Uvakar. So it's coming to tell me that nonetheless, shechita is chal even on a bird. But it's not referring to who does the shechita. And the same thing is true when it says lo'olam shochatim. It doesn't mean when can you do shechita. It means when is the chiyav of shechita, or when is the option of shechita. And that is going according to Rabbi Yishmael. The Omar Rabba that's going, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yishmael, because Rabbi Yishmael says, look, what do you think it means when it says in the Pasuk, "Ki yarchiv Hashem melokecha es gevulcha kasha diberach, v'amarta ochla basar, ki ta'aveh nafshecha lechol basar"? So, you're going to be very far away from a Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem is going to bring you into Eretz Yisrael, and you want to eat meat because you're hungry for meat? B'chol avat nafshecha tochal basar. No problemo. Eat meat whenever you feel the need to eat meat. What is that telling me? That is telling me exactly what it says Rabbi Shmuel. Until that time of Ki Yarchiv Hashem Elokecha Zgevulecha, you were not allowed to eat meat stam. You could only eat the meat of korbanos. But what about meat that you just want to eat because you're hungry? That's called for a ta'ava. And therefore we call it bisar ta'ava. Meat that you're eating out of desire. So, initially, you weren't able to eat just because you feel like eating meat. You can only meet as part of a korban. And that was while they were near the Mishkan in the Midbar. Now, Ki Archiv Hashem Elokecha, you're going to be coming into Eretz Yisrael, and you may be miles away from a Mishkan. Misha Nichlesu La'aretz, therefore comes along this pasuk, says Rabbi Shmuel, to be matir basar ta'ava. Now, how does that explain the Mishnah? Because I might have thought that Akshav Shegalu, now if we're talking about not being in Eretz Yisrael, maybe things go back to the way they were, and you're not allowed to eat Basar Ta'ava any longer. That's why it says, Li'olam Shochatin, you can continue at all times. Sometimes it's also referring not to the people who do the Shechita, but to the items or times that Shechita applies to. So it's consistent with the opening. Bakol Shochatin is a reference to the objects of the Shechita. Li'olam Shochatin is referring not to the people who do the Shechita, but to the times appropriate for the Chiev of Shechita, as opposed to the earlier time when we were saying Li'olam means what time of the day can the Shechit check? That's a totally different issue. Here we're referring to the times, the eras, the epochs in which there is a chiyav of shkita that you are mechuyav. Fine. So lakach shanino, to make sure that you don't make the mistake of assuring brides in South Africa, which would cause a complete collapse of the entire country and economy, therefore the Mishnah had to say, ma'olam shochatin. Matifor of Yosef, that doesn't make sense. Because it has nothing to do with the shechita. It has to do with whether you're allowed to eat, not whether you can shecht. So, highly olam shochatin. I mean, the main question is, can you eat it if you shecht it? That's the point. So, it should have said, olam shochatin v'ochlim. You're always allowed to eat when you shecht. That's the chiddush. Not that you can always shecht. So, why does it stress only the act when that was never the issue? It's the eating that's the issue. So it should say, La'olam shochatim va'ochli, even if there's no Beis HaMikdash. Furthermore, what you're saying makes no sense. What do you mean? You would think that it would become usher. Why in the world would you think that it becomes usher? Why was it usher originally in the Midbar? Because you were right there next to the Mishkan, and if you have a need to eat meat, bring a carbon shlamim and eat meat. What's the problem? The Ki Yarchiv Hashem Elokecha is, what am I going to do if I eat meat, and what happens if I live up in Chatzor HaGelilit? Every time I want to eat meat, I'm going to have to drive down to Yerushalayim, wait in line, try to go through the traffic. Oh my God, forget it. I'll become a vegetarian if I have to do that. So therefore comes along the pasuk to say, no, now you don't have to worry about that. So if you're even further than Chatzor, let's say you're in Joburg. So I need a pasuk to tell me that it's mutter. Obviously it's mutter. If the whole reason was my time at Itzer because you were next to the Mishkan, ulebesof my time at Ishtri. Why did it become mutter to eat Bisar Ta'ava? Because you're far away from the Mishkan. So kosher came now where you're even further away from the Mishkan. So what would be the havamina that I need? I need the Mishnah to tell me that you, even nowadays, you can check. To the contrary, for sure nowadays. So that cannot be the meaning of this Mishnah. And I am going to suggest to you a new meaning. But I'm tired now. I'll only suggest it tomorrow, said Rabbi Yosef. So we'll have to hold on to hear Rabbi Yosef's suggestion. Okay, Rabosai, Chodesh Tov Mevorach, and whoa, 45 days, oh man, Mevorach, and Metzoy Shabbos Shavuot Tov Mevorach, and Elio Anovi Mevorach. Hine El Yeshua, see Eftach Velo Efchad, and maybe Balavai we should have Mesorot Tovot. Things are getting tough. Shavuot Tov. Kol Tov, everyone.
Shavuot Tov.
It's a treat to be with you on this Rosh Chodesh and Mitzvah Shabbos. Kol Tov.